October 20th, 2005, the full committee on the House Veterans Affairs Committee will come to order. By agreement of the minority and the majority, we're marking up three bills today, H.R. 4061, H.R. 3665, and H.R. 1691. I would ask all members to suspend opening statements at this point, and let's proceed to H.R. I lay before the members H.R. 1691, which is a bill to name the Department of Veterans Affairs Outpatient Clinic in Appleton, Wisconsin, the joint, strike the word joint, the, quote, John H. Bradley Department of Veterans Affairs Outpatient Clinic, end quote. I now yield to Chairman Brown for any comments you may have regarding this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wish to briefly comment on H.R. 1691. A bill that would name the VA Outpatient Clinic in Appleton, Wisconsin, the John H. Bradley Department of Veterans Affairs Outpatient Clinic. The longest surviving member of the six who raised the second flag on Iwo Jima, Bradley died at age of 70 on January 11, 1994. A native of Wisconsin, John moved to Appleton with his family as a seven-year-old boy and subsequently enlisted in the Navy in 1943. Serving as a pharmacy mate, his first campaign was Iwo Jima. 2 days after landing with his regiment, Second Class Bradley earned the nation's second highest award, the Navy Cross, for extraordinary heroism. Bradley rushed to the aid of a wounded Marine under intense fire, bandaged his wounds, and then pulled the Marine 30 yards through heavy enemy fire to a position of safety. Bradley himself was later injured in Iwo Jima after a Japanese mortar shell injured both his legs. Bradley returned to Appleton and married his grade school sweetheart, Betty Van Gorp. During their 47 years of marriage, they were fortunate enough to raise 8 children. It is most fitting that John Bradley's heroic devotion to duty and selfless action that earned him not only the Navy Cross, but also the Purple Heart, the Presidential Unit Citation with 1 star, the American Campaign Medal, the Asiatic Pacific Campaign Medal with 1 star, and the World War II Victory Medal, is honored with the naming of the VA community-based outpatient clinic located in the town where he grew up. The essence of Bradley's life is perhaps best captured by a quote that appeared in his hometown newspaper. John Bradley will be forever memorialized for a few moments' action at the top of a remote Pacific mountain. We prefer to remember him for his life in the famous flag raising in Iwo Jima, symbolizes Americans' patriotism and valor. Bradley's quite modest nature and philanthropic efforts shine as an example of the best of the small town American values. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I yield back.
I agree with the remarks from good congressman and support the legislation.
I also have a statement that I will submit for the record. Not to do a commercial here, but I will recommend this book to all the members. This book, I didn't know about John Bradley until I read this book, and this book was written by his son, and he knew his father was one of the flag raisers, but really didn't know a lot about his father until after his death, and he discovered a box that was in the closet after his father's death, and that's where his medals were, and he never even knew all the medals that his father had received. He only knew that he was one of the flag raisers, Mount Suribachi, and he said, well, I want to learn not only more about my father, but I also want to learn about the other men. So he put in a lot of time and he researched the heritage and background. It's written very well, sort of plain spoken, and it's a very easy read. It's moving. My only caution is when you start, you are going to finish it. So it's a fantastic book. I associate myself with the comments of the chairman and the ranking member. Does anyone else have any other further comments? I also permit Mr. Evans to submit a written statement, given the fact that he's a Marine and was recently at Mount Suribachi. Mr. Evans, I now recognize you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You can contribute as long as you want tonight for those kind of remarks. I appreciate it. We're getting something done here. It's very important, and sure, you're leaving, showing us the way there. So we appreciate that. And I want to thank all the members and tell the public people here that we we're out of session and people are leaving. We would have gotten maybe a better turnout of members had we been able to foresee that. But that's why I look forward to your working with you on this issue today and in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Do you have a motion?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, I ask that H.R. 1691 be ordered favorably reported to the House.
The question is on adopting H.R. 1691. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The ayes have it. Without objection, the committee and staff is authorized to make necessary technical and conforming changes of the bill, which is now passed the full committee. Any members who wish to co-sponsor any of the bills included on this bill, please let Deb Cobblier know, the legislative coordinator for the full committee staff. And now we'll go back to regular order and move toward opening statements on our other two bills. The bill we'll move next is H.R. 4061. I am extremely pleased that the committee will mark up the Department of Veterans Affairs Information Technology Act and lay before the members H.R. 4061. This legislation was introduced earlier this week by myself and Ranking Member Evans and 15 other distinguished members of the committee from both sides of the aisle. This committee has worked extremely hard on the legislation to ensure that our efforts support the mission of, quote, one VA. And let me be very clear, contrary to a select few in the VA who are acting with a bureaucratic mentality, they insist that this legislation is not necessary. Well, I think we should examine a little bit of the history and the facts. In 1996, Congress passed and President Clinton signed the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 1996, legislation to create the position of Chief Information Officer for federal agencies. The provisions of the bill were later renamed the Clinger-Cohen Act. In 2001, 5 years after this mandate, the Department of Veterans Affairs became the very last cabinet-level department to comply with the requirements of the Clinger-Cohen Act and appoint a full-time Chief Information Officer. In 2003, then-Secretary Principe directed the VA to centralize its IT processes to better align IT management. This still has not happened. In 2004, the VA hired Gartner Consulting to analyze and review its IT infrastructure and processes. Gartner Consulting is the world's leader in its field and gives counsel to the Fortune 300 companies in the world. Gartner testified that VA's IT budgets are very fluid and without much accountability on how and when funding is set. Furthermore, Gartner Consulting testified that VA could save more than $1.7 billion over the next 5 years by centralizing its VA IT organizational structure. Think about what we're doing here today. That's $1.7 billion in savings. Unfortunately, the VA's lack of action has come at a significant cost, I believe, to our veterans. A $600 million plus for a decade of VetsNet, the automated compensation and pension claims processing system that still has not been implemented after 10 years of development. $342 million for Core LFS, the failed financial management system. $300 million for HR Links, the failed automated personnel system. $485 million annually to maintain VISTA, VA's 25-year-old medical information system. Centralizing our IT systems is extremely important to set the predicate as we move toward IT system for patient medical records. So this really is a great basis, and I'm really proud of everyone who's worked on this. So one of the most important provisions for H.R. 4061 is the centralization of VA's IT organizational structure so that it reports directly to the department's chief information officer. Ultimately, this bill will empower the CIO with authority over its IT budgets, equipment, and personnel. I now recognize the chairman of the Oversight and Investigation Subcommittee, Mr. Bilirakis, for any additional comments he may have on the bill's provision. Mr. Bilirakis.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I was happy to see Ms. Herseth as an additional co-sponsor in the legislation. You've said it and really said it well, and I can't add too much to it. We heard the Secretary of Veterans Affairs and his staff basically tell us what some of the stories of Hurricane Katrina and whatnot in the area, And one of the things that we heard was that when they were transferring some of the veterans from one VA hospital to another VA hospital, that they didn't have the capability to be able to transmit the records electronically. As a matter of fact, they had to do it physically, and then, of course, they had to reconfigure, as I understand it, in Houston or wherever it is they were transferred to. So even though I think we all would agree, and we have really extolled the virtues of the VA to the effect that they are probably ahead of many of the other agencies and departments, and as far as IT is concerned, certainly they're ahead of DOD, as I understand it. Still, I think they do need a little bit of a fire built under them, and for that reason, I believe this legislation is necessary and would ask support from all of our members. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Belrakis. I now recognize Ms. Herthas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the work that you and Ranking Member Evans have done on this important bill, and Mr. Belrakis is the bill's most recent co-sponsor. Let me just say that I think it helps VA construct a balanced, responsive, and accountable system to manage information technology of the Department of Veterans Affairs. VA will receive a centralized framework to manage IT assets throughout the department in pursuit of its One VA initiative. However, there is direction in the bill that information technology in VA is a support function. It is not a final goal. The department chief information officer will be given the control and resources necessary to manage IT department-wide. Measures of effectiveness across the administrations will be tracked and should demonstrate that VA has become a more effective organization. The CIO will have control of the budget, assets, personnel, and systems necessary to achieve this success. Also under the bill, a deputy CIO will be assigned to each of the three administrations. In this capacity, they are the principal advocates for the business and mission needs for their respective administration, all levels of use, from senior managers to end users throughout the field. The deputy CIO will be responsible to the department CIO for IT system alignment and related matters, but will otherwise be in control of day-to-day IT operations in their respective administration. I'd like to congratulate the staffs from each side of the aisle for working out this improved IT management system for VA, and I'm very glad to be a co-sponsor of the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Herthas. Mr. Stearns?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand that you've had a hearing on this bill, and I know that it'll work well. I guess the question I have is there some way that the cost for this will be absorbed, and so that it's not going to be additional cost? And I guess the question would be how much it's going to cost, and if that cost is going to be reduced through consolidation. That's a question for anybody.
Well, I'll let me kick it to staff for chemo, and then I've got a comment.
As I understand, it's going to cost about $25 million.
There is going to be some startup costs. The exact figure I don't have on hand. However, again, the potential savings over the five-year period is $1.7 billion. Whether you do a federated approach or any of the approaches that are associated with VA, there are costs to start up, whether a federated or a centralized approach.
And this is over how many years is the cost incurred?
If I remember correctly from Gartner Consulting, sir, the cost was, and I'm strictly serving from memory here, was I think the first two years.
And then after that it would save money?
That's correct.
Yeah. Well, I think that's just important to put on the record, Mr. Chairman, as we go forward, knowing how important every dollar is to the veterans. So with that, I applaud my fellow Floridian for the work he's done. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other further comments on the bill? At this point, I would like to thank Art Wu for his good work. I'd also like to thank Lynn Sistick. Both of these gentlemen and their staff have put in almost 5.5 years of work in the IT arena. So they've watched this. They went through a lot of problems over the years, and we've evolved to the point where placing the CIO with empowerment over personnel and budgets is pretty important, and this will be the first department of government to do this. So I want to thank everyone for their co-sponsorship of this bill. I also want to thank Jim Lervier and Jim Hawley for their work, because we have some pretty extensive report language that's going to go with this bill. And normally we don't talk a lot about report language, but I have to read one part because we need to send a pretty important message down to the VA right now. It's come to the committee's attention that the department and its leadership intend on implementing a federated model. characterized by an IT organizational structure where technology operations such as data centers and networks are controlled by groups with all business applications developed and supported by each business line, whether medical care, pension, housing, or finance. The committee believes that the federated model is inconsistent with the express direction of the VA Secretary in August 2003, as well as previous guidance from the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. It is the committee's view that the federated model would not optimize IT support and service delivery VA-wide. Therefore, committee directs that the VA shall not adopt a federated model for its IT organizational structure. Shall not adopt a federated model for its IT organizational infrastructure. This committee further maintains the view that VA's efforts to date are not sufficient to facilitate the desired changes in IT management at the Department of Veterans Affairs and directs the department to centralize its IT management. This is just one paragraph out of it, but this is very important for the VA to know, and I place it on the record. I also will ask this report language will be submitted as a summary to this bill. Hearing no objection, so ordered. At this point, I will now, any further discussion on the bill? Any amendments on the bill? I now yield to Mr. Evans for motion.
Mr. Chairman, I ask that H.R. 4061 be ordered.
Oops.
I'm sorry.
Let me pause. Dr. Hold. We're finished? All right. I'm sorry. Mr. Evans?
Mr. Chairman, I ask that H.R. 4061 be ordered favorably reported to the House.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The bill passed. Without objection, committee staff is authorized to make necessary technical and conforming changes to the bill. Our third bill under consideration is H.R. 3665, the Veterans Housing and Employment Improvement Act of 2005. It's introduced by Chairman Bozeman, Ms. Herthus, Mr. Filner, and Mr. Evans. By prior agreement with Mr. Evans, the ranking member, we will consider an amendment in the nature of a substitute. This is a bipartisan bill that, as amended, would include provisions from Chairman Bozeman's H.R. 3279, the Homeless Veteran Reintegration Program Reauthorization Act of 2005, and ranking member Herthus' H.R. 1773, the Native American Veteran Home Loan Act, and Mr. Simpson's H.R. 419, the Higher Veterans Act of 2005. I ask unanimous consent that the amendment in the nature of substance be considered as the original context of the bill. Hearing no objection, so ordered. This bill would improve the flexibility of the VA's adaptive housing grant program, extend the authorization of the Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program, make the Native American Veterans Home Loan Program the permanent, and extend the life of the President's National Higher Veterans Committee. The amendment would make technical and clarifying conforming changes to new section 1980A of the Title 38 and the Traumatic Injury Protection Program, which was established in the supplemental. Finally, before us, this amendment will provide several clerical and technical corrections as provided by the Legislative Council. I now recognize the Economic Opportunity Subcommittee Chair, Mr. Bozeman, for a summary of the bill. You're now recognized, Mr. Bozeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Evans. I'm pleased to recommend H.R. 3665 to you for passage. This is a good bill done in a very bipartisan manner, and I hope we can send it to the House for its consideration. Title I would provide a partial adaptive housing assistance grant up to $10,000 to severely disabled veterans and up to $2,000 for less severely disabled veterans residing temporarily in housing owned by a family member. Number two, authorize that a veteran may receive up to three separate specially adaptive housing grants within the allotted maximum amounts. The next three provisions come from the Economic Opportunity Subcommittee ranking member, Ms. Herseth, H.R. 1773. Makes permanent the pilot program for housing loans to Native American veterans, extends the eligibility for Native American loans to certain non-Native American veterans who have a meaningful interest in the property under tribal law and are the spouses of a Native American, and limits the maximum loan to conform to the Freddie Mac limits, similar other VA loans, currently $359,650. Mr. Chairman, the taxpayers have made a significant investment in the work of the President's National Higher Veterans Committee, and we feel strongly that a one-year extension will allow a proper transition of the duties and products of the committee to the Veterans Employment and Training Service. Therefore, Title II would extend the operation authorization for use of appropriated funds for the President's National Higher Veterans Committee until December 31, 2006, and transition some of its duties to the Assistant Secretary of Labor for Veterans Employment and Training. Also require the Assistant Secretary of Labor for Veterans Employment and Training to develop a transition plan and provide it to Congress not later than the 1st of July of 2006. Also modify the title and membership of the Advisory Committee on Veterans Employment and Training and expand the duties of the Advisory Committee to assist the Assistant Secretary in carrying out outreach activities. We all know that homelessness among veterans continues to be a problem. While there is some disagreement about the total number of veterans needing shelter and the means to break the cycle of homelessness, there is no disagreement that the HVRP program remains a valuable tool to put homeless veterans back to work. I want to emphasize that this is an employment program managed by the Veterans Employment and Training Service at the Department of Labor, not a housing program. Title III would reauthorize the Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program for fiscal year 2007 through 2009 and retain the maximum authorization of $50 million per year. Title IV makes a technical change to the SGLI legislation. It also contains clerical and technical changes to clean up numerous other sections of Title 38 as proposed by legislative council staff. The staff has reviewed council's proposals and gotten the concurrence from both the VA and Veterans Employment and Training Service. Mr. Chairman, this is an example of how we can work together to achieve good things for veterans, and I urge my colleagues to support 3665. Especially want to thank Ms. Herseth for all of her time and efforts and good ideas in getting this bundled together. And then especially, I think she would agree with me, that I want to thank my staff and her staff for their spirit of cooperation in really producing, I think, a very, very good bill for veterans. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bozeman. Ms. Herseth, you're now recognized.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm pleased to be here with you and other members of the committee today to mark up H.R. 3665. The bill incorporates a number of important provisions, as Chairman Bozeman described, that would provide added flexibility to the VA's adaptive housing program, improve the Department of Labor's Veterans Employment and Training Service, and reauthorize the highly successful Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program. In addition, the legislation does include language from H.R. 1773, the Native American Veteran Home Loan Act, a measure I introduced along with a number of our colleagues earlier this year. As Chairman Bozeman explained, Section 102 of the bill would make permanent the Native American Housing Loan Program, currently a pilot program administered by VA since 1993. Now, by all accounts, the pilot program is a great success, and in fact, currently has a negative subsidy. That means it pays for itself. So hopefully that addresses the concerns anyone else on the committee may have. The Congressional Budget Office estimates that enactment of the provision would generate savings of $1 million over 5 years. Section 103 of the bill authorizes non-Native American veterans married to a Native American spouse and living on trust or tribal land to fully participate in this direct loan program. And I want to thank our colleague, Mr. Falioma Vega, the delegate of American Samoa, for bringing this issue to my attention. I want to also thank the VA for its assistance in drafting this particular provision. So let me also echo the thanks to Chairman Bozeman for his hard work, strong leadership, willingness to work closely together, our respective staff and their hard work throughout this session. I look forward to working with you, Mr. Chairman, and with Mr. Evans to move the bill forward through the committee process. And I urge all members of the committee to support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Herseth and Dr. Bozeman, for your good work on the amendment. Any other further comments on the amendment before the committee? Are there any amendments on the amendment before the committee? The question is adopting the amendment.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I don't want to delay things, and I have no problems with the amendment, the legislation, or anything of that nature. I guess the only question that I have in my mind is, a Native American veteran, that person, does that qualify for housing assistance the same way any other American veteran does? I mean, why? I guess I'm asking the question, and this is ignorance on my part, I realize that, but why was this piece of legislation, Title I of the legislation, necessary? Is there something going on out there regarding the Native Americans that we don't know about?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your question, Mr. Bilirakis. It's in addition to Native American veterans, we have a lot of challenges in for all Native Americans who live on tribal trust land and housing opportunities. So this was a pilot program established about 12 years ago that has direct loan opportunities to the veterans themselves as opposed who live on tribal trust land, as opposed to a procedure by which they have to first apply to tribal government. It facilitates direct loan and financing opportunities for the veterans themselves. Section 103 then also applies to non-native spouses of those veterans who may be living on tribal trust land. The whole issue is very complicated by a system of rules and regulations for tribal trust land where many of our Native American veterans live.
That's where the problem lies. If they live on tribal trust land, they've got to go through that particular process, and this would sort of shortcut that.
That's my understanding, and it's worked very well for a number of veterans, Native American veterans, who have taken advantage of the pilot programs that have been working for a number of years now. So it makes permanent the program itself to provide those direct loan opportunities. And as someone mentioned, we've had some of our government-sponsored entities involved in that process.
If the young lady will yield. So it would give the Native American veteran the same rights that any other veteran has, because any other veteran doesn't have to go through that particular process.
That's exactly right, okay. Because of the complexities of tribal trust land and how it's managed by the tribe.
Thank you. That's very good.
This is a situation where we did a pilot. The pilot proved itself, and now we're adopting it. So I thank you for your work and the legislation. Hearing no further comments nor amendments, the question is adopting the amendment in the nature of a substitute. All those in favor, say aye. All those opposed? The amendment in the nature of substitute carries. I now recognize Mr. Evans for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I ask that H.R. 3665 as amended be ordered favorably reported to the House.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? H.R. 3665 as amendment passes. Without objection, the committee staff is authorized to make necessary and technical conforming changes to the amended bill. I want to thank everyone for coming.
Mr. Chairman, if we have opening statements, can we make them part of the record?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely.